Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Wednesday's brought to you around here by Metro Rooter on Jaguars Today, live at Everbank once again, back in our home away from home. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on this Wednesday. Hope you plan on spending the next couple of hours here with us talking Jaguar football and look around the NFL. We're also going to check in, Tony, on that rugby matchup as the World Cup qualifying gets underway Friday night at Hodges Stadium. We're going to have the captains of Team USA and Team Jamaica join us a little bit later on in the program as they're going at it for trying to vie for a spot in the 2017 Rugby League World Cup. We'll get to that coming up, but Tony, it's December. It's December 2nd, as a matter of fact, and so the month has arrived, and what did we say in terms of the offseason? I know I said it many times. I don't really know what the record's going to be, but I want them to be playing meaningful football when they get to the month of December. And I agree with Dan. Right now, while you're still technically alive, I don't know how many teams have technically been eliminated from playoff consideration, if any, in the National Football League. That's not a good enough standard. To me, they're a little bit short of the expectation or the hope, desire that they would be playing meaningful football starting this month.
I don't think they're short, honestly. For a team that, if you said before the season you thought they were going to win six or seven games, that's where they're at, right?
But they're
in contention to do that right now. So I get that they're not solidly in the playoff race. They are a team that's still in the hunt. I think even before the season, when I said when they got to December and we saw this team is still being in the hunt, this is about how I saw it. 4-7, 5-6. I didn't expect them to be any better than that going into the month of December. So I think they're right around where I thought they would be at this point in the year.
To me, in a year where the AFC South is so down, and I understand in terms of the record, but the way the season has played out, when you look at the amount of backup quarterbacks or key injuries that have faced some of their opponents, and I know the Jags have had their share of injuries as well, to me, I think they should have been able to capitalize on a few more opportunities based on the way the season played out. They think they're a game to two games short of where they should be. Not necessarily based on my expectation back in August, but just based on the way reality played out over the last 3 months. But today, the fan feedback spotlight question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships asks you basically that. Here we are embarking on December games. We've got five games to go for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Is this team at where you thought they would be, ahead of where you thought they would be, or maybe a little bit behind where you thought they would be heading into the month of December, as we all talked about them wanting to play meaningful games, no matter what the record is? And however that you want to answer that, feel free to bring your opinion to the table today on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and of course on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. You can get in today at 641-1010. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. I guess, you know, meaningful football can be defined in a lot of different ways. Every game you play is meaningful to one degree or another, but I'm talking about playoff relevant football where you feel like you've got a chance and you don't need a lot of help, that your path is clear, that if you were to finish out winning your games, you'd be right there in the mix. I don't think that's the position they're in right now. I just think they have too many teams ahead of them in both the division and the wild card to consider that.
If they went 5-0, if the Jacksonville Jaguars go 5-0, I think they're going to make the playoffs.
I don't.
I honestly believe it. I think 5-0 is going to be good enough because they do still have head-to-heads with Indianapolis and Houston in this thing, and I don't think either one of those teams are going to win their next five games either, and I could totally see Houston or Indianapolis going 3-2. I could see them both going 3-2 in that span, especially with a head-to-head loss
right
to Jacksonville.
The
if Jacksonville goes 5-0, I think they're going to make the playoffs.
3-2, though, puts them at 9-7 as well. And right now, those teams have the tiebreaker over Jacksonville. I know the head-to-head would even out if the Jags won out, but Houston and Indy still play each other. So if that team goes 3-2, the winner of that game, then the Jags can't catch them because they're going to have a better division record than the Jaguars are at the end of the season. I think that's the problem you're looking at right now if you're a Jacksonville Jaguar fan. At least that's potentially the way it could play out. I suppose, look, there's a scenario, I guess, where Houston could beat Indy, finish 3-2, lose the right games, and the Jags could win a tiebreaker head-to-head on division record with them. But I just think these scenarios are getting increasingly unlikely.
Well, they are because they lost to San Diego. And, I mean, they lost the game they shouldn't have lost at home to a bad team. And that puts them in a much worse situation when it comes to the playoffs. If they go 5-0, I think they're going to get in somehow. I don't think this team at 9-7 is going to not be in the playoffs. But that's a lot to ask of this team right now, to ask them to win five games in a row.
I don't expect that either.
So, and when we ask the question about, well, how is Indianapolis doing what they're doing? Football stinks this year. Honestly, there's a couple good teams, and everybody else is the same team. It's a bunch of teams that are very flawed at the same time, and it's, do your flaws kill you in a given week? For Indianapolis, they found ways in the last 2 weeks where it hasn't been too much for them to overcome going up against other teams that are bad. There's a couple good teams. There are 20 bad football teams in the National Football League right now. Houston looks like they're rounding out into a team, at least right now, that is playing very well. Can they maintain that momentum over the last month of the season? We'll see. I think they're the most likely candidate in the AFC South to be able to do that right now. But the truth is that the NFL is not very good this year. There's good teams and a bunch of bad teams.
There's a handful of good teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, really consistently good teams. But the problem is the teams ahead of you in the division are handling their business against bad teams. Even if they're in that group of bad teams, they're taking care of their business at a higher clip than you are, and doing it with quarterbacks that, either in the case of Hoyer, have been benched already this season, or in the case of Hasselbeck, had no plan to start or even play at all this season. And so I think that's part of the frustration there. If you want to get in today, again, 641-1010. Share your thoughts with us on that. Are the Jags, as they enter December, where you thought they'd be, ahead of where you thought they'd be, behind where you thought they'd be, or hoped they would be, heading into this final month of the season? Also coming up, we'll hear more from Gus Bradley that we didn't get to yesterday with the J-Fund Radiothon going on. Once again, thanks so much. $91,800 that you guys were able to donate and raise to benefit families here on the First Coast. It is much appreciated, and it will go to great use, as we've seen over the years with the Tom Coughlin J Fund. And don't forget to support those guys year round at TCJAY Fund, TCJFund.org online. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. We'll come back. We'll hear from Gus Bradley, head coach of your Jags, later on today. We'll take a look at that Rugby League World Cup qualifier coming to Jacksonville, coming to Hodges Stadium on the campus of UNF on Friday night. Team USA versus Team Jamaica. That's coming up for you in just a couple of days. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today live at EverBank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, Johnny O is here. Johnny O just...
I surprised you a little bit.
He just let me know. Well, he did. He let me know I might have an addiction problem as well, Tony.
I was talking about the caffeinated Crystal Light.
Yes,
but the reason I stopped in a little early today, I do need to talk to you about the opening of the show.
Oh, okay.
For the sake of your family, for us, I think you need to back off in the playoffs.
did I go all in on the playoffs? I'm not sure what I need to back off about.
I just felt sorry for you. Going over scenarios and tiebreakers and
my point was that we're really not going over those scenarios and tiebreakers now.
And you do what I often do, which is go over them by not going over them.
What are you supposed to do? You have to acknowledge where they stand and then you know, give your opinion on whether or not it's realistic to think that they have a chance to overcome that.
Yeah, and it's
what else have I done wrong so far today, John? Please tell me.
It is too bad.
So we're up to two.
I was thinking the same thing last couple of days. You know, you just hoped. I don't know if the playoffs were ever that realistic, but you certainly hope that there would be that conversation through December as they sort of, I think everybody knows they're building towards something in the future. But it would have been nice to have that conversation in the present.
Yeah, I didn't expect them to make the playoffs this year.
Right.
But
as you said, once the season played out the way it did, it became a thing.
Right. Somebody tweeted almost the exact same thing, and we'll read some of these responses later, that, you know, if, based on the record, and I picked them to go 6-10. I think we remember that Logman was in the day we did our predictions. I'm pretty sure he went 7-9. I went 6-10. So record-wise, they're pretty much right where they're supposed to be in regards to that. But then you see how many of the opponents they played, key players fell by the wayside.
Right.
The fact that, you know, statistically or record-wise, they're playing the weakest schedule down the stretch of any team in the entire National Football League. I don't feel like they've capitalized enough on the opportunity that this year presented them.
And they were 4-7 in 96. Whoa, Tony just threw something in my head.
They were. They were in 1996.
I had to duck out of the way of a...
Do you expect a replay of 96?
No, I don't either. So,
yeah,
and I don't sound like Debbie Downer. I just think where this team is, still looking for pass rush, still looking to try to figure out this red zone thing. I've been saying for the last 5 or 6 weeks, the dicey thing about this team is it was hard to imagine them being up late in games to where you felt like you could start knocking off 3 or 4 in a row. Everything was going to be a flip of the coin. And when you flip a coin, it doesn't always go your way.
You know what? True story. You want to hear the true story that has no real bearing on anything other than the coin flip part? When I was a kid...
Wait, no, sounds like I'm going to.
This is true. You're going to hear it. Okay. Well, I wanted to know if you were right. going to turn this into strike three or not with me. But when I was a kid, we had a washing machine that was broken in our house, and we had a sheet over it.
Right.
I don't know why it wasn't fixed. I don't know. But I had a nickel, right? And the nickel, I was playing with a nickel, and it went rolling across the floor, and it went behind the washing machine. I said, you know, when we finally move that washing machine, whether it's heads up or tails up, that will be my lucky side for the rest of my life. I said this. I'm like 4 years old. I really remember this. True thing happened. We finally pulled the washing machine out. It was still sitting on the side.
That's really
what does
cool.
that tell
yeah,
you? I don't know what that yeah. tells you, but it's a true story.
You know, if you had a nickel for every time that had happened,
that's like double zero when you spin the roulette wheel, right? I mean, you don't bet green.
Right.
You bet red or black.
How many years after that was it?
That's probably a couple months or something like that. You know, it could have been 2 days. You know,
sure,
but to a kid,
right.
it seemed like a year. Like, wow,
work.
Man, that thing was there forever.
That afternoon.
It might have been. It might have been immediately after. I'm not quite sure. But for you, John, then how would you answer the question? The question of the day is: based on where the Jags stand going into the month of December, are they ahead of where you'd expected them to be, behind, or about where you expected them to be overall this year, heading but before the season started?
In terms of the record, they're probably right where I thought they'd be, maybe 5-6. You know, you kind of go back to when that thing sailed right and left against Indy, and if they were 5-6, I think most people would be like, yeah, 5-6. So, you know, it's okay, they're one kick away from being that, and then they're three other plays away from being a lot worse. So they're right, I guess they're where I thought they'd be. I think they're ahead overall offensively from where I anticipated in terms of now looking like a team that can create big plays and big chunks on offense. That's a good step. And I think we feel after watching this team like that's something that they do, and it's probably not going to go away. I think Julius Thomas looking better and more like a core guy. I think they're looking better on offense than I thought they'd be. And really, as odd as it sounds to say, except for the pass rush, I think they're better on defense than I thought they'd be. But that pass rush is just absolutely crippling them because they can't get home. They can't get off the field on third down because of it, and they can't close games because of it. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys playing really well on defense, but yet when you can't count on that pass rush to snuff out 4th-and-7, or 3rd-and-8, which, as I went back and watched San Diego game yesterday, 4th-and-7 stands out, but there were still a lot of plays on 3rd-and-long, or 3rd-and defense should have been off the field downs.
Yep.
That just don't happen with this team. Now, the other team's going to pick up some of those. It's the NFL. You have good quarterbacks, but there's too large a percentage. I keep thinking back. The indelible impression in my mind in this season is the Houston game, when Brian Hoyer kept standing and standing and standing, and you couldn't get him off the field, and that is really overall where the defense is. So except for a few very key things, I think they're ahead of where they should be, but those key things are killing the record.
No, they are. And look, a team that gives up 3 yards a carry on the season should be able to get off the field on third down. I mean, that's the way the National Football League is. If you're giving up that few yards when teams want to run the ball, you ought to be able to win on third downs more than they can. And I've been saying it since October. This is a completely different-looking football team if they had one guy that could win one-on-one on that defensive line. And just two or three times a game, just blow up his matchup and go make a play. That's what they drafted Dante Fowler Jr. To be. Unfortunately, they didn't have him available to him this year. But I think it is a completely different feeling team. And I think the way that people look at the Jaguars would be different if they had that, but they don't. They don't have that, and if they could find some way to solve the red zone, which you were hoping would happen over the course of the last couple weeks, but they haven't been able to, look, they would have gotten away from Tennessee. They would have gotten away from San Diego, and instead, they're having to find ways to either win or lose those games in the fourth quarter because they can't solve that part of the field. If they do, this is a team that looks like it could score 30. On a pretty consistent basis, but right now, they're just unable to solve that part of the field.
I guess you're getting down to the point where, at the end of the season, it feels like you know exactly what they're going to, the major things they're going to do in the offseason. And they're going to add a pass rusher along with Fowler, and they've got to, and they have to address the interior of the offensive line. Maybe that comes when they get Linder back, and he moves in for Beatles. You wonder about center. I didn't think the interior of that line run blocked very well the other day. I think that is what caused them to get away from the run maybe earlier than they should have, because there was that stretch in the first quarter and the second quarter after the early run where they just didn't get anything going, and second and seven was turned into third and nine, and it felt like they lost confidence in it. And after looking at the first half of that game, I understood why they lost confidence in it. You still had to stick with it, but it was hurting them in down and distance. And I just think you're going to look at the interior and try to get better there.
Yeah, I just think you got, I think you, like you said, you had to stick with it. I think, you know, 55 dropbacks to 12 handoffs to the running backs is way out of whack against a team that was struggling that much against the run. Even if you have a patch where you're, you know, that's the NFL. When you average 5 yards a carry, you don't go 5, 5, 5, 5, 5. You go 10, 12, and it balances out over time. What if anything have you heard so far this week on Allen Hurns?
I haven't really heard anything. The feeling you get based on what this team has done in the past with guys, you know, with the way that looked on Sunday, I'd be surprised if he plays. But as somebody said yesterday, this is Hurns. So he's a tough guy, seems to grit it out, but I don't know that you do that with a concussion. So I think it's going to be questionable all week. If I had to guess, I'd be surprised if he's out there.
So what do you see playing out at the wide receiver position then? Is Brian Walters the next man up?
What do I see playing out? I'm not sure. What I hope plays out is I hope Marquise Lee is there, because I think you need, I think he needs to play. I think you need to figure out if he's that guy. My guess is there'll be different packages and you'll see a mix of them. I would like to see Marquise opposite A-Rob and Hearns a spot if that's not the case.
Clearly, though, for the last couple weeks, they're making Marquise Lee earn that spot, right?
I guess.
It seems that way, at least based on his usage.
And I don't think you're going to see him able to earn that spot doing what they're having him do right now.
Understood. So I guess that's, you know, would they kind of, you know, almost change
Rashad
philosophy?
Rashad played over Brian Walters the other day, it looked like, more than I expected him to. And I haven't looked at the numbers. There's just a couple times I looked in the field and thought, well, that's an area Walters would have been playing before, and now Green's in there. I think Green is the guy that they want to see if he's that slot guy. Clearly, they think he's got some special potential. And to me, I just think at this point in the season when you're 4-7, I sort of understood the last 3 weeks where you had a trust factor with Walters. There had been some chemistry. You got that going. But I just think at some point, Marquise Lee went from 5 targets against Baltimore to 1 target the last 2 weeks. That's not going to get him going if you want to get him going. If Hurns is out and it doesn't happen this week, I don't know that you see him. I don't know that you see his role change the rest of the year. And I'd be surprised at that, because I think they need to figure out if he's that guy.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Because if he's not your take the top off guy in the wide receiver core, then you need to figure out if you need one or not. I think they still do. A-Rob and Hurns are very, very good what they do and turn into core guys. But doesn't it feel like you still need that guy who can stretch it, who can make special plays? Marquise has that. If they don't believe he's that guy, then you got to look somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't know if they question the talent. They just probably question the availability and the consistency. He's not out
right.
there, you know? I mean, we haven't seen him out there enough to know if he's got the talent, but he hasn't done
it. So you're never going to trust it?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you're at a point where I don't think he's shown us anything, any reason to believe he doesn't have the ability to
right.
do those things. I still think it's an unanswered question,
right.
was my point.
So, again, I don't know what the plan is, and as I wrote, I think, yesterday or today, I don't think we're going to know what the plan is because there's no reason for us – there's no reason for them to come out and say,
sure.
hey, Marquise is going to play 35 plays and here's the
right.
– but I do think – at some point, you've got to have him running 20 yards downfield and show that at some point in the offense.
All right, we got a caller on the line, 641-1010. Paul in Mayport wants to comment on the pass rush. Paul, go ahead. You're on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Your pass rush, I think you guys are doing well with the pass rush. I think the Jaguars. My comment was more of a frustrated pass rush from a Dallas Cowboys perspective. I'm a poor Cowboys fans who are just suffering like crazy and have already given up and have gotten on the Jaguar bandwagon mainly to support my son because he is a hardcore fan and all. But the stat that I heard the other day was, and this was before the Carolina game, that the Cowboys had no fourth quarter sacks this season. I think the Jaguars have got them. They're better than that. So the Jaguars are not scraping, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, when you compare them to a team that has zero of anything, I don't know if that's the standard you want to be held to. Bottom line, when you're a bad team
nope.
or when you're losing most of your games,
yeah.
you're not ahead in the fourth quarter, and
right.
other teams are going to run the ball against you, and you're not going to have as many opportunities to sack the quarterback, too.
Numbers-wise, this defense and the staff, I think, does deserve a little credit. They've created some sacks. They're not at some historically low number sack-wise.
They're middle of the league.
Yeah, so... nobody's saying that they haven't created pressure at times, but in this defense, you need to get pressure with four, and when you don't get pressure with four, it creates opportunities on the back end that can hurt you. And so, yeah, they've done a good job, especially in the last 4 or 5 weeks, I think, at times of manufacturing some stuff. Colvin's gotten home, and they've done some good things with that, but when you're trying to close out games in the fourth quarter... and you're wanting to do that with your up front so you can guard against what's going on in the back end, and you're not getting it, that's the issue we're all talking about.
All right. We'll talk with you Friday. We'll find out then
Absolutely.
if you're feeling victory in the offing for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I feel victory in here.
In your heart?
In my heart.
Well, there
I'm
you
having
go.
My heart. That's good radio.
By the way, I wanted to mention, because it's making the rounds right now, the Jags just announced it. Zane Beatles has been announced as the team's nominee for the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year Award. And that represents the best of the NFL's commitment to philanthropy and community impact. And Zane Beatles Parade Foundation has raised more than $250,000 in its 2-year existence, and its mission is to support the journey of young people going through life-changing medical experience and provides fun, excitement, and joy to young patients and their families, much like the organization we celebrated yesterday, the J Fund. So kudos to Zane Beatles. And I'm sure many, 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 many guys on this roster that do philanthropic work and give back.
That's well deserved. And as much as we talk about Zane on this program, on the field, his work in the community, his consistency, his effort on those fronts, and his availability on the field, a lot of strength to the guy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So kudos to him for the job well done behind the scenes at times, but nice to recognize it as the NFL and the team has done as he's nominated now for the overall Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. Johnny O?
Have a better day moving forward.
I'm having a fine day. I was, anyway. We've got Jaguars.com live today. At what time?
11:45-ish, 11:45-ish, moving into Blake Bortles' press conference.
There you go. John Osier, the senior writer for Jaguars.com. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
All right, we'll see you Friday. There he goes, Johnny O. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, back with some of the words of your head coach, Gus Bradley. Coming up next, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today continues. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today. Metro Rooter for all size plumbing jobs in home, your place of business, industrial plumbing, septic systems, you name it. Metro Rooter has the solution. They've got the know-how, same-day service, weekends included. The right people and the right equipment is why Metro Rooter has been so successful serving Jacksonville and the surrounding community since 1978. If you've got a plumbing issue, you want to make sure you don't, call Metro Rooter at 695-1911. That's 695-1911, or visit MetroRooter.com online. Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Tony, let's get into a little bit of Gus Bradley press conference audio that we didn't have time for yesterday with everything going on with the J-Fund Radiothon. Again, kudos to you if you're just tuning in. $91,800 raised by the people, your donations out there, our listeners, and, you know, whether you're the listeners of this program or any other program, anybody that contributed, anyone's helped the J-Fund in the past or donates to charity and makes other people's lives more tolerable. Kudos to all of you.
Smash the goal.
Job well done. Crush the goal, right. Set the bar awfully high for 2016, but that's a good problem to have.
Go for 100 next year, right?
Why not? Go for 100. I mean, we were going for 75 this year. We got nearly $92,000 thanks to the generosity of the people across Jacksonville. So sure, let's go for 100 grand next year, and let's go for a day when the J Fund is no longer needed. But I have a feeling that day is a long, long way off in the future. So in the meantime, we appreciate all the work that they do. Let's get into Gus Bradley now. Talking on Monday, and things are going to ramp back up again today after the players' day off. You heard John Osher talking about Blake Bortles meet with the press, his midweek a typical press conference, and we'll be off and running towards the visit to Nashville with the Tennessee Titans awaiting. And looking back on the game, some of what went right, some of what went wrong for the Jags this weekend, one of the things, Tony, that stood out clearly was Blake Bortles on near consecutive times going across the line of scrimmage and really seeming like he didn't have a ton of field awareness on a couple of passes. The one to Allen Robinson, which, is, I guess you could look at as a would-be touchdown, he was a full 2 yards across the line of scrimmage. It was just odd. And in that instance, that first one, I don't know if he would have made it in. It seemed like he had a shot to kind of lower his shoulder. I know you don't want your quarterback taking big hits all the time, but, I mean, isn't that kind of the occasion that maybe you say, okay, this is one where you lay out when you're, at the 4-yard line with momentum moving towards the goal line? Gus Bradley weighed in on those forward passes and the penalties they created.
We always say, hey, there's going to be penalties and there's foolish penalties. And I think both those were foolish penalties. And he'll be the first one to admit it. And he's got to recognize where he is on the field and the situation and understand the dynamics of it and go accordingly. But we hope he removes it real quick.
It's not just that, with Blake, Tony, it's the offsides on 3rd and less than 5. Look, I get it. You want to get upfield. You're trying to create a play. But, I don't know if those are deemed foolish penalties in Gus Bradley's lexicon or if those are just penalties of aggression. But they're penalties you can't have. You can't give a savvy quarterback a free play on 3rd down when he knows you're offsides, because when the ref throws that flag and they don't blow the play dead, they know it's on the defense. That kind of stuff is particularly frustrating when you look at how close the margin between victory and defeat has been.
And the Bortles plays, I mean, he needed to get to the 1 for a 1st down, too. He didn't even need to score. He just needed to get to the 1-yard line, and especially that first one where it looked like he had an opportunity to at least do that. If he puts his shoulder down instead, inexplicably, yeah.
I don't think the second one gets him where he needs to go.
No,
so
that one, and he's barely past the line of scrimmage. Maybe he thinks he is. Maybe he doesn't.
He's trying that, and that one I think he's trying to save. Right. Let me throw it out of bounds, save a hit against me. And in the end, it didn't really matter that much if you weren't going to complete the pass. The first one was a little bit more glaring,
no doubt about it. Gus Bradley on Monday also talked about Allen Hurns, obviously. A scary moment for everybody, all Jaguars fans and football fans for that matter, watching Allen Hurns go down the way he did. But Gus talked about his concern for Allen when he watched that play happen.
Well, it's concerning anytime. It's a team member that's out in the field and you're not sure what's going on. Our medical staff did a great job with it and how they responded to me after the situation in the locker room. I'm just glad. I think we're all relieved that he's good.
And also, just what the importance is. You know, a few weeks ago, we were saying at that point in time, a lot of Allen Hurns was the MVP of the team. Now, there's still a lot of football to be played out, but at least through the first half of the season, he's right there in the conversation as the most valuable, most productive Jacksonville Jaguar. And Gus weighed in on just how important Allen Hurns has been to the team this year.
You know, his leadership, first of all, off the field, and I think his leadership on the field is something that he brings to the table. The quarterback trusts him. Blake really trusts him. I think, you know, all members of the team really trust him. His work ethic, and, you know, and he's a guy that really is what we're all about, because every day that's what he's trying to do, is find a way to improve. And I think every day he does in some facet of his game.
Yeah, Hurns has been really good this season. It feels like Allen Robinson has really stepped up the last couple of weeks, though. You're starting to see those, you know, sky balls that he's going up and getting, winning those one-on-one matchups more and more often for this football team, but certainly want to see Allen Hurns back on the field as soon as possible. Maybe not this weekend after that type of hit. You might want him to take at least a week off against Tennessee, but hopefully you see him sooner rather than later. Gus Bradley talked about the safety position for this football team as well. It's obviously an area of concern going into the offseason, what they're going to be doing at free safety. Is Cyprian the right guy at strong safety going forward? And Gus said that that position needs to improve just like everyone else on this team.
You know, the safeties, we ask them to do a lot of stuff now. So some of the concepts bring them down in the box to help on the run. Some put them in man coverage. You know, they do a wide variety of things. So I think just like with everybody, there's areas of improvement. But a guy like Jonathan Cyprian has put together a couple good games together. And we challenge him. He played man-to-man on Gates quite a few times yesterday.
All right, let's jump ahead one here, and because we talked so much about the red zone on Monday, it was practically the code word for Monday and bleeding into yesterday a little bit as well. And as we jump ahead, the question about T.J. Yeldon being used, not being used, we understand that Blake Bortles checked out of some plays down there, but overall, this is Gus' thoughts about not running Yeldon on Sunday in the red zone.
There was a couple. There was two calls that were, it was more of a run-pass option that we didn't get it to him. I think overall, looking at it, in the first half, we had 8 carries for 35 yards. You know, pretty efficient. There was 24 total plays, I think, in the first half, or, you know, maybe a little bit more than that. But I think there was 18 passes and 8 runs. You know, to give him the ball a little bit more, or running backs the ball a little bit more, you could see the advantage of it. I think there was a point in time in the fourth quarter where we were in a 2-minute mode, maybe with 6 minutes left to go in the game, you know, where we got away from the run completely. But I think that you know, with the yards per carry, we had over 100 yards, but Blake had quite a few of them as well. So I think that when you can run the ball, it opens up the play passes and allows for more explosive passes.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a picture of what this season has been, in that it's missed opportunities for this Jaguars team. It's missing a field goal against Indianapolis. It's not being able to take care of business against what was a struggling Tampa Bay team and letting them run the ball the way they did. It's not taking advantage of the matchups that you have on a weekly basis, and Sunday it seemed like the running game was the matchup, but often the case in the NFL is if the running game is going to be a strength for you, it means you have to be committed to the running game for 4 quarters of that game. And it's really going to start paying dividends probably late third and into the fourth quarter. And for Jacksonville on Sunday, they didn't do that. Gus Bradley also talked about Blake Bortles and the question that I think a lot of fans have, when are those crucial mistakes going to stop?
I'm not sure when that time comes. You know, if there's, you know, in 2 weeks it will happen, or, you know, if you can call it like that. But you hope he learns from all these. You know, we threw it, 40-some times in the game. He threw one interception. I don't know what's reasonable. I know that one hurt. I know it took the wind out of us a little bit. I do know that. But when you throw it 40-some times with a second-year quarterback, is there going to be time when there's an interception? You know, I don't know what's realistic. And I think some of those mistakes that he makes. But we always say, hey, there's going to be penalties and there's foolish penalties. And I think both those were foolish penalties. And he'll be the first one to admit it. And he's got to recognize where he is on the field and the situation and understand the dynamics of it and go accordingly. But we hope, you know, he removes it real quick.
Yeah, it's more than 40. I mean, honestly, he dropped back 55 times. He scrambled 6 times. So those weren't called designed running plays for your quarterback. So they intended to throw it in the mid-50s, or at least at the snap of the ball. Now, again, even checking out of a couple of run plays, the percentage of pass to run, crazy crazy high this weekend. All right, we got to take a timeout. We'll come back. This Dayton football, the Honda drive around the NFL, still to come in about 25 minutes. We've got the captains of USA and Jamaican rugby coming in. They're going to square off on Friday night in Hodges Stadium as part of the World Cup qualifying for 2017. Team Canada will also be in here next weekend taking on Team USA, and Jamaica and Canada will play in DeLand next week as part of a three-team round robin going on. All that and more coming up on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing. On this date in history, December 2nd, 1984, Miami Dolphin quarterback Dan Marino broke the NFL single-season touchdown passing record. Get this, when he threw his 37th touchdown pass in a 45-34 loss to the Raiders. He finished the season with 48 touchdown passes, which was so far ahead of the norm back then. It took a couple of, nearly two decades to have it broken by Peyton Manning. And then, of course, it was broken again by Tom Brady, then rebroken by Peyton Manning. And the record currently sits at 55. Same date, December 2nd, 1985. The highest rated Monday Night Football game of all time. Still the highest rated when the previously undefeated Bears fell 38-24 to those same Dan Marino-led Miami Dolphins. According to the 2015 official NFL record and factbook, the game on Monday night on December 2nd in 85 generated a 29.6 rating, a 46% share. That means that 46% of all TVs that were turned on were tuned in to that game. Those numbers now, Tony, dwarf the current numbers because it's on cable now, and you're never going to get those as long as it's on right. ESPN, no matter how prevalent ESPN is.
Yeah, I see those kind of numbers for, like, World Cup, like the Soccer World Cup stuff, like overseas. I think when France was in the final a couple years ago, they had like an 88 share or something stupid like
my
that
goodness.
On their TVs, but you don't see that anymore, especially here in the States.
All right, famous birthdays for this date. Willie Brown, NFL defensive back, longtime guy with the Oakland Raiders, started his career with the Denver Broncos. How about Willie Brown, Tony? 9 Pro Bowls, 5-time a first-team All-Pro, and a Hall of Fame inductee in 1984. He turned 75 years young today. O.J. McDuffie, former Dolphin receiver, was born in this date in 1969. He is 46 years old. Zach Crockett. You remember Zach Crockett with the Jaguars?
Not really.
I don't either, really. And yet he was here in 98 towards the tail end of the season as I was looking up how many years he played in the league. I think it was about 13, former fullback out of Florida State.
Yeah.
And was here as part of the 98 team down the stretch. I don't
remember that.
I'm drawing a blank on that myself as well. But he turns 43 years old today. Former Gator Channing Crowder, now better known as a talk show host himself down in South Florida, turns 32 today. Likewise, Aaron Rodgers turns 32. Is Aaron Rodgers the best quarterback in football?
No, Tom Brady's
it's
still in
tough,
the league.
It's tough, right? Because yeah. I thought Rodgers was the best coming into the season. He's not having a better season than Brady, but you look at Rodgers' numbers, they're still ridiculous. The guy's still only thrown 3 interceptions all year long.
Oh, it's silly. What he does is silly.
It really is, but clearly that Packer passing game is not clicking on all cylinders, but you know, have to wonder what the Patriot passing game is going to look like with Rob Gronkowski out, at least for the short term.
Sure.
Right now, Aaron Rodgers, 32 years old today. Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, presenting this date in football history. Call Bob Roberts, 287-7756. You have issues with your roof at your place of business, at your home, or you don't want to have issues, call Bob. He'll have it all checked out and taken care of for you. License number CCC056797. Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, presenting this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Cleveland Browns quarterback Josh McCown is out for the rest of the season with a broken collarbone that he suffered on Monday Night Football. When McCown left the game against Baltimore, it was Austin Davis, not Johnny Manziel, who got the ball for the Browns. But head coach Mike Pettine is not saying who will get the start this week yet. McCown has been placed on injured reserve. Wide receiver Terrell Pryor has been signed to fill that vacant roster spot. Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger says that he will be able to play on Sunday, but he hasn't finished completely passing through the league's concussion protocol yet. After sustaining a concussion, the Steelers lost to Seattle on Sunday. He is going to be able to practice today, which is a good sign, at least, for his availability potentially this weekend. Former Cincinnati Bengals defensive tackle Devon Still announced yesterday on social media that his daughter Leah has no evidence of cancer after being diagnosed with stage 4 neuroblastoma last June. So a pretty great story there.
That's awesome. You know, we hear a lot of those stories this time of year, don't we, with the J Fund. And you never get tired of hearing the ones that, you know, knock on wood, keep getting checked out, but continue to find out that these kids come through on the other side and they're cancer free. We saw somebody tweeted at us, the young lady who was in studio with us a couple of years ago, Tony. What a beautiful little young lady she was.
Yeah.
And had been dealing with cancer, and she just posted, I think, her second year of free cancer-free scans.
Yep.
She just celebrated yesterday.
She brought in cupcakes for all of us.
That's awesome. Yeah, she did. She did, and we appreciated it very, very much. Before we get to some other things here this morning, I want to get back to a little bit of what Gus Bradley was talking about on Monday. In particular, you know, a couple of the guys, look, we understand the pass rush and the state of the pass rush or the lack of pass rush that the Jaguars have had, and you know, I've heard it described all different kind of ways, that the coaches are idiots, the front office are idiots. If they feel that Andre Branch and Chris Clements are the best options and they keep running them out there, clearly, I've heard people say, clearly, this is an example of why Gus Bradley does not know what he's doing coaching this football team. How can he possibly send these guys out? My response to that is typically, they're there with them in practice every day of the week, and they're also there with all the other candidates to rush the passer. And, you know, we've talked about Ryan Davis because on a per-snap basis, he gets after the quarterback as good as anybody on this team typically.
Yeah.
But the question is, can he play down in, down out, and hold up as an every-down defensive end against the run? Because he's not the biggest guy out there. Gus Bradley was asked specifically about Branch and Clemens on Monday. This is what he had to say.
I think they played solid. Nothing over the, you know, to mention in here and say, hey, they had great games or anything like that. I think that you're going to have some when guys are, you know, there's times in defense alignment it's not acceptable, but they're trying to get a great get off and they're trying to do it. So you may have, you know, on a team that passes it 40 times a game, you can have a, you know, one here or there. But, you know, they're just at critical times, third down situations, and, you know, so we got to clean those things up.
Now, certainly he was talking about the offsides penalties that those guys were flagged for. And
three, yeah.
Yeah, three total between the two of them, which is not good.
Including the first play of the game. It's inexplicable, thoughts and things those guys are doing.
I'd rather take it on the very first play of the game that you come out and you're all hyped up than get it on a key third and four, right? I mean, that just absolutely devastates you and extends drives and, you know, wears out your defense and it demoralizes you and all these things. Now, Gus described their play as solid.
He's solid.
And, yes, solid. And, Tony, that got me thinking, when is the last time we've heard this description? Who was this in reference to, by the way?
Stephen Morris.
It was Stephen Morris. Was it in a preseason game?
Yeah.
Yes, and Gus was talking about the play of Stephen Morris in a preseason game, and this is what he had to say at the time.
Actually, we don't have that cut. I could not find it, but we had nowhere we could find it at in the system, so I'm not sure what happened.
Oh, I thought we had that cut. All right, never mind.
I remember the cut well.
Well, the cut was basically said he's solid, and then Gus in a moment
where
he,
I say solid,
right?
He needs to get better.
He dropped the pretense and the code word solid to Gus. Basically, I mean that's Gus's way of not exactly complimenting your play,
no.
Right? And if it's consistent, as he said at the time, you know, he said it. Yeah, Steve Morris, he was solid, and then he kind of chuckled. He said, "Well, you guys know when I say solid, you probably need
right.
to play better, right?"
Look, it's a tough situation for the Jags to be in, right? I mean, they're playing the run so well. They're doing so well against opponents' run game right now that you feel like they just need a little bit more in that pass rush and they'd be in really good shape there on that front four along that defensive line. They just don't have it. They don't have it. They don't have the answers to have both in the building right now, and I think that frustration is something that is understood by the coaching staff, and there's no easy solution out there where the pass rushers don't become available. They just don't. And young pass rushers in this league get re-signed by the teams that they're drafted by because they should be re-signed because they're so difficult to find. You're watching the Jaguars try to find it right now. The fact that they've gotten what they got out of Chris Clemens since he got here is pretty good. To be honest with you, is he great? No. Is he a solid veteran pass rusher? That's about what you expect out of a guy at that point in his career, and that's what they've gotten. Andre Branch hasn't developed. just hasn't developed into the pass rusher they needed him to be as a second-round draft pick, which is why he's not going to be here next year. Clements may not be here next year. It's why they drafted Dante Fowler. I think they felt good about what they were going to look like against the run and knew they needed something against the pass, and they tried to go get it. It didn't work out for him, and now you're watching the results of that right now. But there's, you can't just go find the solution on the street. It's not out there, and it's probably not in the locker room right now.
They signed a guy like Quanterrus Smith. We talked about him. Early last week?
Yeah,
right?
Maybe he comes in and does something for you.
But that's
at some
the kind
point.
Of guy, Tony, the guy who's had 2 years already ended due to injury and has done nothing in the NFL, and he was a fourth or fifth round draft pick when he came in a few years ago with Denver. That's as good a quality as you're going to find out there. A guy who's never made it through a season healthy, who maybe showed a brief glimmer of something in a preseason in the past, and so you bring him in, you put him on the practice squad, and you hope that over the course of an offseason you develop into maybe a situational player for you. That's what you can find out there, realistically.
Look, you draft pass rushers, you don't sign pass rushers. In the National Football League, that's just the way it works. You draft guys, you don't sign guys, generally speaking, in free agency. And that's not the only position that's like that. I'm glad that we haven't talked draft on this show, that it's December and we haven't talked any draft. But
we haven't had the need to.
Right, but I was looking at some big board rankings today just out of curiosity at positions, not really where the Jaguars were going to be, but just positions in the upcoming draft that the Jags may be looking at. You know, you start talking defensive end, probably an outside linebacker of some sort. Free safety, obviously, going to be a position they may look at. They're just not available, right? I mean, there's defensive ends that'll be available to the Jags wherever they're going to pick. They're in the first round. And maybe a guy like Shaq Lawson winds up being a guy that they're looking at hard with wherever they're going to wind up. But you start looking at free safety, they just don't play college football. And the transition for that position to the NFL is ridiculously difficult because nobody's asking free safeties in college to do what they're going to be asked to do when they get to the National Football League. They're just not. So trying to project these guys into the league is ridiculously hard. There's not a first-round grade on a free safety in this draft coming up right now. There are some positions, it's just hard to find the answers. And I think offensive line and defensive backfield right now are the most difficult things to find the answers for in the entire league. There are 25 teams right now whose fan bases are saying our offensive line sucks. And it's because guys that are 360 pounds and are as athletic as you need to be to block guys that are 320 pounds that can move don't grow on trees.
Hey, 360s like that don't exist.
Right. It's difficult to find those answers, and every team in the league basically is dealing with the same kind of questions when it comes to that.
All right, let's take a break, and we return in a moment to welcome in the captains of both Team USA and Team Jamaica as they square off in a World Cup qualifying match this Friday night at Hodges Stadium over on the UNF campus, and they'll also, Team USA will be playing Team Canada here next week. Teams Jamaica and Canada will square off at Spec Martin Stadium in DeLand during the next week as a three-team round robin for World Cup qualifying in 2017 is getting underway. We'll give you all the details on that. Plus, we've got some tickets to Friday's match to give away to you as well. That's coming up in a moment, and the fan feedback question of the day still looms. We'll get to that in the final segment of the show. Asking you today, as the Jags enter the month of December, are they ahead of where you thought they would be, behind where you thought they would be, or about exactly where you thought they would be in terms of your preseason expectations for this football team? Still time to get in at 641-1010. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, or, of course, post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Wednesday's brought to you by Metro Rooter. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. We'll take a little bit of a detour right now. As a matter of fact, I've got a 4-pack of tickets. We've got many, courtesy of our friends with the Jacksonville Axemen Firehouse Subs, that we are ready to give away to you right now. We'll take caller number 3 at 641-1010. If you want to go see the official national teams of the United States of America and Jamaica square off at Hodges Stadium on the campus of UNF on Friday night, this upcoming Friday night, we got a 4-pack of tickets for caller 3 at 641-1010, and plenty more to come throughout the course of the rest of the week as Tony and I welcome in our buddy Spinner Howland, the founder of the Jacksonville Axemen. What's up, brother?
Good, I mate. What's going on?
How are you?
Good to be back in here with you again.
Another prestigious event you have brought to the First Coast, it appears.
Mate, a big team of people got this one together. Look, you know we've been wanting this event, this specific event, for a number of years. We almost had it in 2011, the qualifiers for the last World Cup. That went to another city. And a big team of people have been working away on this one for a long time. So I can't take all the credit for this. It's been a lot of people from the chairman of the USA Rugby League all the way down to bring an event. First of all, to bring the event to the United States as the host nation, and specifically to bring it to Jacksonville. No, unquestionable, the testament to the sport that the Axemen have had with our sport here. It's the Jacksonville fans that have made this happen.
It's pretty amazing, right? What kind of turnout do you get for a typical Axemen game?
Mate, it's varied, obviously, over the years, and of course it varies if there's, you know, something else going on town. But we've had crowds as high as about 2,500 at Axemen games, especially when you're, you know, in the years that we've hosted the national championship game and playoff game, stuff like that. It's been great. And for our sport, to bringing those kind of numbers in is absolutely phenomenal in the United States.
Now, you've got Team USA, you've got Team Jamaica, you've got Team Canada here, and we're going to speak with a couple representatives from Team USA and Team Jamaica here in a moment. But they're playing a three-team round robin, basically, right, over the course of the next week plus. You'll have Team USA playing here at Hodges Stadium twice, and then Team Canada and Team Jamaica will square off in DeLand midweek next week as well. And basically, top team out of the three, one spot. You go to the Rugby League World Cup in 2017.
Yeah, that's right. So it's just like Tony and I had this conversation not long ago. It's not unlike the Soccer World Cup. You're put in a region. So this is the Americas region, obviously, with Canada, Jamaica, and the US right in the middle of it. So the three teams there, of course, look, Rugby League is played in other nations in the Americas region at a lower level. So there's some development happening down in Mexico. There's some development happening in other Latin American countries. But these are the three dominant nations at the moment. So they meet the criteria to be allowed to qualify, and it's a win and you're in. They put them together. This is the Americas region qualifying tournament. And in 2017, the Rugby League World Cup, it's actually going to be hosted in Australia, New Zealand, and Papua New Guinea. They'll have the qualifying rounds, and then obviously you move on there into the quarter and semi-finals. I think will all be held in Australia. But this is as big as it gets. If our sport was an Olympic sport, this is your Olympic rugby league team.
This is the right. This is right. This is the national team from each country.
Come and scream USA, USA, USA.
There's not like we're putting together some guys, and this is the No, this is as good as it gets for rugby league in the United States and in Jamaica.
Yeah, the players have been brought in from five different countries around the world. So obviously there are Americans that qualify that are playing professionally in Australia, playing professionally in the United Kingdom. So, and all the teams, the Canadians and the Jamaicans, they've selected the core group of the best domestic players from our competition, and then also the best available professional players from around the world. So there's actually players from six different countries on these teams that are playing here. And it is absolutely the best rugby league you're going to get to see in the United States, without a doubt.
Let's welcome in our guests. Let's start with our true guest to our nation's shores here, Ricardo Bramwell, representing Team Jamaica, the captain. How are you, sir?
Good day, sir. I'm good. How are you?
Good to see you. Look, let's be honest. Most Americans, when we think of Jamaican sports, we think of two things. All right, you can probably guess what they are. One's Usain Bolt. The other is bobsledding. Okay, we are ignorant to your country's sporting ways, so you're here to educate us. Tell us about the growth of rugby league in Jamaica, how popular it's becoming.
Well, it's getting very popular now. Remember playing back in high school, it wasn't as popular as it is now. But putting in the work and the dedication and time, a lot of advertisement, getting international teams to come down, and as well as we going abroad to play, we have certainly developed the sport at a level right now that if you mention rugby league in Jamaica, everyone would know what you're talking about.
Is it a great sporting culture overall? Are people really in? I mean, in America, you can't go anywhere with somebody talking about the latest sporting event that went on.
To be honest, rugby would not be up there like a track and field, Usain Bolt,
sure,
football, those things. But we're right beneath tier after the popular sport. We're above cricket right now, which is a big thing for us. Right,
because you're above cricket right now.
Yeah,
I don't know if Americans realize how popular cricket is around the world. Right.
Yes. So for us, it's a really big deal to see the rise of the sport like this. So it's just an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Well, and how big of a deal is it for your teammates and for Jamaica to be in this event? I mean, that for us, this is a pretty big deal if you're a rugby fan in the United States.
Well, it's a really big deal for us. If we qualify, we'll be the first team to qualify for a World Cup in Rugby League. So you can imagine the pressure and the pump and the excitement there. And we're here, no offense to the USA, but to win all our matches.
We understand,
right?
Yeah.
We're here to beat everyone, make history back home, right, and return home proud.
Yeah, I don't want to hear much about the Jamaican football team after the Gold Cup. To be completely honest with you, I'm still not completely over that loss for Team USA. But, you know, for you guys, it's just such a cool thing, I imagine, to be able to, in a sport like this, where it is still developing and you're trying to get attention for the sport, to be able to put on your nation's colors and represent. I mean, what does that mean?
Well, in Jamaica, it's the greatest honor, you know, put on the black, green, and gold and represent Jamaica. No matter what level, to wear these colors is the ultimate honor. Where it's not here about money or anything like that. The best thing you can do is to make a national squad and to make my sport national squad at any time, rugby. It's the best honor. To be at this level now, World Cup qualifier, you can't believe the excitement and the ecstasy of how we're feeling. We're really, really hype, here to work, so we're going to put in the work so we can return home proud.
Ricardo Bramwell representing Team Jamaica. We've got Mike Timpano here with us, former Jacksonville Axeman, Axeman guy, however you want to say
we're climbing
that,
him.
Right? Now with the Philadelphia Fight, right? Is
correct.
That correct?
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You hear all this this talk here. You guys got to be fired up as well. You're representing on your home soil. To put on the red, white, and blue for a national team to be at the highest level of your chosen sport's got to feel just amazing to you.
Oh, absolutely. Every time you mention it, it gives us goosebumps. I mean, a lot of the guys that are on this team have been working towards this for 5-10 years, and it's just such an incredible honor. And like Ricardo was saying, once you put on the colors of your nation, it doesn't get better than that. So much just excitement and enthusiasm goes into the preparation and knowing that we are going to go step out in front of our country and do the best that we can to bring home, you know, the hardware so we can go to the World Cup.
And no offense to Ricardo and the Canadian team as well. I hope there's a bunch of folks out there chanting USA, USA. I mean, that's part of the home field advantage, right? And I'm sure Ricardo understands that. And, you know, but look, supporters of rugby in general, we hope you take the opportunity to go out. And when you look at the growth of this sport and the time you've been playing, Mike, I'm amazed. You know, I remember when Spinner started up the Axemen here and what it's grown into and the different events and now to have a World Cup qualifier right here in Jacksonville. It's been amazing from a local perspective. You've seen it from, you know, the national perspective now. What has it been like? How amazed are you at how popular it's gotten?
Oh, it's absolutely incredible. So I was lucky enough to have the honor to be on the first Axemen team to bring home a national championship. So I know just what it means for the fans in the city to come out and be able to give back to them. And I've seen some of the international level played down here, and like Spinner said, it's just been an honor to be able to host some of these events. And coming from a perspective now where I play for another city back home in Philadelphia, coming down and hearing the fans and knowing how much this sport means to them down here and how it came from the grassroots, and it's really incredible, and it makes a huge difference to see when they come out and they cheer for us and they show their support, and we love it. And it makes a difference, just like football, you know, when you got that extra man in the sidelines screaming for you, it gives you the energy to get that extra yard meter and push through.
Al, we've heard a lot anecdotally over the years, Tony, about Philadelphia sports fans, right, and how they can treat their guys well and not so well. What has been the reception in Philadelphia for the Fight?
Oh, it's been incredible. Just like down here in Jacksonville, we have some really good fans. We have gotten almost as much as Jacksonville has gotten in terms of numbers in the stands, and we have a great support system and following. And I'm sure there'll be a couple fans down here to come and support us. We were lucky enough to have 5 of our guys selected for the national team, so it's an honor, and we're really excited to be here.
For both of you guys, really, but you've both grown up in countries where there are options. If you're going to go into sports, there are options. So for you guys, why rugby? Why did you gravitate towards that sport over the others?
Well, specifically for me, when I came down to Florida for college, I was a wrestler. And they didn't really offer it at the school that I went to. And a couple of buddies were running around on the field, playing some rugby and got me into it and said, hey, here's another chance for you to hit somebody. So I came out and gave it a go and fell in love with it immediately.
And we'll get to Ricardo's answer on that in a second. You're listed officially on the Philadelphia Fight website at 5'4", 188, which not too many guys in the National Football League spinner at that size. And, Mike, we talked to you a moment ago off the air. It can be an advantage, right, terms of eluding contact. But when that contact finds you at 5'4", 188, how does that go for you?
Yeah, it's not the greatest advantage. Yeah, it can hurt when you got a guy that's as big as Ricardo, you know, probably 6 foot, 250, you know. It hurts. But when you're as small as me, you got to use your other abilities, and you got to be quick, and you got to be able to maneuver and make sure you don't get squared up.
There you go. Ricardo, as Tony said, why rugby for you?
Well, to be honest, I had the privilege of playing a lot of different sports, basketball, football. But a couple of friends of mine tried out for the rugby team, so I was like, another opportunity to play some sport. Cause
the
I
next
really
challenge
like sport.
For you.
Yeah. And to be honest, after the first couple of training sessions, you just kind of fall in love with it and fell in love with it from that day and dropped every other sport and put it all into rugby.
There you go. Spinner loves to hear that.
Mike, look, and for me, this is, when I sit back and I look at this, as you know, in the U.S., 100% of the people from the top, the chairman of our board, all the way down to guys managing teams, operating teams, playing the teams, it is 100% volunteer. No one's paid. This is and in all three nations that are here now, it is operated exactly the same way. It truly is for an absolute love and passion for a sport. So you have guys that would basically chop their own arm off to get to this point where you're draping your nation's flag on as a jersey. You're going to stand out in front of a crowd of people, and your national anthem is going to play while everyone is focused on you. Like the goosebumps, having had the absolute honor of being a part of that, you know, only a handful of times myself, you will never forget that day. Like you stand there and you're like, man, I'm really you. For the next 10 minutes, no one's going to hurt you. You run through a concrete wall, no problem, I'm there, straight through it. The other end of it is that the coaching staff that has been assembled, so Leeds Rhinos, which everyone in Jacksonville is familiar, they've been to town a bunch of times. Their head coach, Brian McDermott, has won multiple, it's the equivalent of the Super Bowl in the European Rugby League Championship, so he's won that multiple times. This year, Leeds Rhinos went through and won every possible trophy there is in our sport in Europe. It's called the treble, never been done, won everything. He is equivalent to Bill Belichick, and that's without exaggeration. Like, he's been there, he's done it. He was named yesterday, in all sports in the UK, he was named the coach of the year. So all their sports,
right.
The soccer, the union, everything, he's it. And he has now volunteered his time to come and coach the U.S. national team. It's that passion, those guys, that you just, it's for the game. You just love that game, the organic love of it, the passion, and you can't buy that. It doesn't matter if a player's making, you know, $1 million a year to play a game, or a player is literally, you know, putting his own petrol or his own gas in his car to get somewhere, they're going to give you 110% because they're here as a part of a team that I just want the team to be in a World Cup. You can't buy that.
And is that a case of they see that, boy, if this thing really can take off to a higher level in the United States, it's going to raise the visibility and it's just going to be better for the sport all around, right?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt whatsoever. Look, mate, I'm very fortunate. You know, at this stage, I'm old and decrepit, and I've had my day in the sun, and I just, look, I help out where I can nowadays. I do my bits and pieces, and I'm part of a great, you know, volunteer organization that puts on these events. So for me, it's kind of, I get to hang out with the boys a little bit at the hotel, and I watch, you know, it's kind of reliving the days, but man, I remember the day, and you kind of, everything gets exaggerated, yeah, when I was playing. But to watch the level of the sport to get to this point, and it kind of hits me even now that the World Cup qualifiers for a sport have come to Jacksonville and DeLand, Florida, and this is it. You win this.
I feel I'm responsible
you go to
for
a
that.
World
I
Cup.
Went to high school in DeLand, so I feel I'm partly responsible.
Oh, I've used
for
your
this.
Name down there for all sorts of bad things.
Yeah, get your door slammed in your face repeatedly.
But yeah, look, mate, it truly is that event where the fans come out and you hear it. It's the famous chant, right? USA, USA, USA. Where you hear it at the Olympics, you hear it at the games when they're in international competition. I know they scream it at the Soccer World Cup. That's the environment that is going to be created. And it comes around once every 4 years in our sport. So very few players get to play more than one. and less than 1% ever get to play in any of it. And this is their shot. I mean, how can you take away the adrenaline that runs through a guy? Put your flag on, you go out there, and we're going to sing the anthem to you. Ugh. Now go start bashing the other team. No problem. I'm on it.
Well, here's the deal. Jags are away this weekend, right? So not everybody's making that trip up to Nashville. If you are a Gator fan who's not making the trip to Atlanta because you don't exactly expect a good outcome, great opportunity to get out this weekend. And if you don't win tickets, certainly tickets can be pre-purchased at 10 local area firehouse sublocations, or you can go online at jacksax.com. It's only $10 for general admission, $15 for special seating with in-seat concession service. Kids 12 and under, absolutely free. And as a matter of fact, right now we'll give away another four-pack of tickets. We'll take the fourth caller at 641-1010. If you want to see Team USA square off with Team Jamaica in Rugby League World Cup qualifying this Friday night at Hodges Stadium at UNF, just be caller number four right now at 641-1010. Spinner, good luck to both teams. And for you gentlemen, congratulations on being able to have the honor to represent your countries. That's pretty phenomenal, man. When I was a kid, I tried to figure out what Olympic sport could I do that I really did. You know, I wanted to be in the Olympics. I thought that would be the greatest sporting achievement. This is the equivalent right now for rugby league. And so congratulations to both of you guys, and best of luck, and have a hell of a match. And you know, good luck against Canada next week for both of you as well. And Spinner, great job once again putting together, or helping to put together, a terrific event here on the
Look,
First
thanks,
Coast.
Mate. And to you, look, I remember the day you and Tommy were there, and I sent you that crazy video, and you're like, what the is going on here?
Yeah.
And you
we
said,
liked
I'm
it. It was violent, so we said, all right, let's check this out, you know?
Mate, I do have
that
to
was,
make a
how many broken noses ago was that for you?
Ah, listen, I'm a good-looking fella from the shoulders down.
You were going to say?
Yeah, no, this, you know, I made a... I had the UK police here last week at the Jags game, and they were blown away at the experience. And the word solid come up. In Australia and a lot of other, you know, sort of Commonwealth nations, if someone says solid, if I do you a solid, mate, I'm going to do you a solid here. It's like doing that favour for someone that's... So if I was in prison and I shank someone because you told me, mate, thanks for doing me that solid.
Right.
So... It's kind of a little different to hear him say, well, he played solid. You know, it's like, mate,
yeah,
do me a solid.
I've heard do
and
me
I'll
a
be
solid.
Okay.
That's
do
a
me
different
a solid.
Story. By the way, you did say you had 27 rugby league representatives, players, combination.
Mate,
from
the United
game.
Kingdom, they were at the game and the Jags game, they were here. They were, and this is a credit to the Jaguars organization and Shahid Khan all the way down. The experience, the game day experience, they come to me and they said, if we lived here, we would have to come back to another game to see everything that was available for us to see. It's like going to the theme park and, man, I missed out on a couple of rides. I've got to go back. So
they were, you said they took in the pool area, they took in the bud zone, all the different
amenities.
They
walked
amenities.
Through upstairs where all the photographs are. They did the hot, and they said, we know we've missed things here. There's stuff that we really wanted to see as a part of the NFL. And for that reason, the game day experience. Look, we all have our opinions on we'd love the team to be winning, and we'd like maybe some different outcomes and some different things being said. But from the game day experience, none better.
I thought it was pretty cool because I saw Jaguars president Mark Lamping after you told me that the other day. And I didn't know if these guys had gotten, you know, some VIP treatment or whatever.
No.
I said, do you realize you had 27 guys from the UK soccer over here, or rugby? It was soccer or rugby?
Rugby. Yeah, it was rugby. Yeah, it was okay. Well, the police have their own team,
right.
So they're all UK police.
He had no idea they were here, but I told him how complimentary they were, the experience. He was very happy.
Blown
to hear that.
Away. The
very cool.
The entire event they were here.
People will be blown away on Friday night as well. And again, get tickets at Firehouse sublocations around town or go to JaxAxe, JaxAxe. E.com. $10 gets you in for general admission, $15 if you'd like special seating with in-seat concession service. Kids and 12 and under are free as always. And again, we'll be giving away more four packs of tickets throughout the rest of the week. Mike Timpano and Ricardo Bramwell representing Teams USA and Jamaica. Congrats again, guys. Thanks for stopping in today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
We appreciate it. All right, we got to take a break. We will come back. Dr. Stephen Lucy from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute coming in next. Maybe he needs to check these guys out. They look like they're pretty spry, actually, Spinner. They look like they're doing okay. Maybe after the game on Friday.
Mate, you can't hurt Granite.
His services will be needed. We'll check in the weekly injury report. That's next on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious.
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
All right, turned out to be a busy little day here on Jaguars today as we get set to welcome in Dr. Stephen Lucy, one of 31 physicians with Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Just wanted to note, we got a couple of questions I couldn't get around to, or I didn't notice Tyler trying to pass them along to me while we had Spinner and the guys in here a moment ago. One caller wanted to know about youth leagues for rugby in the Jacksonville area. Another one wanted to know about the difference between Australian rules football and rugby, and we've talked about that at times in the past. But Spinner will be back next week with representatives from Team USA and Team Canada, and they'll be playing, I believe, the week from Saturday, also at Hodges Stadium out at UNF, and we'll try to answer those questions for you when he returns. So be listening for that probably midweek next week as well. Dr. Stephen Lucy is here with us. Hi, Doc. Happy post-Thanksgiving. Hope you had a good one.
I had a great one. Good to be back.
Good. It would have been nice to get a Jag victory this weekend, but wasn't in the cards for them. Want to talk to you, Alan Hearns, obviously, in the concussion protocol, and we want to talk this week a little bit about, you know, diagnosing these kind of situations and what happens and what the procedures are. We understand the NFL is trying to do more to protect players with potential head injuries and brain trauma and all these different things. When you have a circumstance like Alan Hearns goes down and he stays on the field, it's easy to see that something has happened. It's not always easy to see with every player that gets dinged. What are you looking for, and who is looking for it on the sidelines at an NFL game?
Well, you know, as we talked about last week, remember the medical staff and the personnel is just like you guys and fans. They're watching the game. They're following the ball, and they don't have the advantage that the TV fans have of these replays to see exactly what happens. But you see somebody go down, and you're not sure, you know, they've told to stay down, so you don't know till you actually run out in the field and assess the situation. But you can tell it's a scary deal for the player, it's a scary deal for his teammates, and it's a scary deal for the fans when you see him laying down like that. So the guys run out on the field, and in this particular instance, I understand that Allen was knocked out. And even if they're only out a couple of minutes, to the doc and the trainers and the medical personnel, that seems like forever because the guy's laying there, he's not responding. You're going through all the stuff that you learn in CPR, ABC, airway, breathing, circulation, all this stuff. And then you're waiting for them to respond. Anything that is severe enough injury to knock somebody out can also hurt their neck. So when they come out of being knocked out, they don't go from out to perky. And so if they can't really assess whether there are any tingling, movement, or arms, how they're doing, they're going to take the conservative course, put them on a spine board, get them off. They take them to the emergency room where they can clear them with x-rays. You know, and by the same token, sometimes maybe they're not knocked out, but they're down and they say their neck hurts. One of the scariest things as team physicians we do is with somebody with neck pain is to actually sit them up and walk them off the field, because you have to spend time to be sure they don't have any more serious injury. And most of the time, if they say they've got some tingling down an arm and a leg, even though it may be nothing, they're going to get spine boarded and sent to the hospital as well.
As a general rule, though, when we see a guy like Alan Hearns laying there and he's able to move his legs once he kind of comes to and move his arms, obviously that would be a good sign, right? I mean, it's not a guarantee that there's no damage, but is that one of the signs you're looking for, just movement in the extremities?
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, when they're not moving, at least at first, that may be because they're out, but it also may be because they have damage to the nerves going to their extremities, which is usually coming from a neck injury. Because we teach no spearing, we teach this, but you got a helmet, and you're going to hit the ground, and you're going to hit somebody with your helmet, and that's exactly how you can break your neck.
Are you seeing improved adherence to the way the NFL wants you to tackle guys? Are you seeing results? Are we far enough along yet to know if we're getting tangible results, that the number of these head impacts or potential concussions and concussions are being lessened due to the penalizing of players going in head first and things like that?
You know, I don't know that they can say for sure on the concussions, but throughout the entire football, high school, college, professional, the anti-spearing rule has definitely cut down on the catastrophic neck injuries. There's no doubt that it has helped that. This business, tackle with your head up, because the worst thing is hitting your head and flexing your head. And so those rules have definitely helped the bad spinal cord injuries. The concussions, the data is coming, but I don't think we can say for sure that we've made some impact. We definitely like to think we have, but if you look at the statistics per team, it's like anything. It's like injuries. One team's going to have more injuries one year, less injuries the other year. Is that sort of something that the strength and condition guys do, or is it the luck of the draw? Who knows?
And without getting specifically into Allen Hurns, we'll get an update from Gus Bradley a little bit later on. If a player does lose consciousness due to an impact on the field for whatever length of time, I would guess that means very likely or unlikely that you're going to see him the next week. Or does that really have any bearing? I guess they just go through the protocols, and when they're cleared, they're cleared.
Yes, on both counts. I think common sense would dictate that a more severe injury as being knocked out is going to take longer because, as I told you last week, what we're looking for is you have to be totally symptom-free on Monday
right.
to have any chance of playing. So the likelihood of that is less. But what we're learning is sometimes being knocked out for, 30 seconds isn't always worse than not remembering your name for a day and a half. So, it varies, and they all go through the same protocol. But in the end, they've got to be cleared by an independent neurology-type person, and that person has to be comfortable that they can go out, and somebody that's been knocked out, the level of comfort probably isn't going to be there.
Well, let's hope a full and speedy recovery for Allen Hurns, whatever that entails for him, whether it's on the field this week, next week, or even later, that he's good to go moving into the future. I'm sure all the proper care and precautions will be taken in that regard. Dr. Stephen Lucy, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute, and we're lucky to have Dr. Lucy pop in with us every Wednesday. Dr. Lucy, have a great week. We'll do it again next Wednesday.
Sounds good.
Thank
See you
buddy.
Then.
There he goes. All right, Tony, fan feedback spotlight today. Based on where the Jags stand heading into the month of December here on December 2nd, yet to play a December game, are the Jags ahead of, behind, or about where you expected them to be was the question of the day. What kind of feedback did we get?
From Irish Jaguar, they're honestly slightly ahead of what my expectations were in August. From Chad, the Jags are about where I thought they'd be as a whole, but the biggest positive is Blake Bortles. From Eric, about where I thought, would like to see better, more consistent play, but still in the playoff conversation. And from Black Dog Express, Jaguars are just about very nearly in the exact vicinity of right where I approximately thought they would be.
Well, that narrows it right down perfectly. I understand that. Let me get a few on the Facebook side. From Seth, he said, yes, the offense is much more capable than I expected. The defense is struggling much more than I expected, and the overall record is about right where I expected. I figured it would be. So he's saying, yes, they are ahead of, behind, and right exactly where I thought they would be. But wins against surprise teams and a win in London stand out as significant steps in the right direction. Lynn said, I really thought they would have more wins, but they're playing well except in the red zone. Kevin Tappy said about where I expected. Derek said with the flashes and positivity and injuries his team has had, it's been a moving target of expectations. I'm just glad they can make more improvement over the last quarter of the season. Bill Spencer, offense better, defense worse. Chris said, while at times it looks like we take two steps forward, we then take five steps backward. No consistency. We are a 5 or 6 win team this year. Not enough pressure on opposing quarterbacks, just my opinion. That's why we asked for it, Chris. Thank you. Damon said, about where I expected, considering the youth on the team. With youth in time comes experience. With that being said, most of the youth will be in years 2 and 3 next year, so the excuses can be thrown out the window next year. Bob said, I predicted 6-10, so about where I expected record-wise. What I didn't expect was for Bortles to be poised to break both Brunell's yardage record and Garrard's TD record. If Bortles sets both the Jaguars' single-season records for yardage and touchdowns, he'll have arguably the greatest single season for a quarterback in Jaguar history. I certainly didn't expect that in his second year. Aaron said at the beginning of the year, I expected to win a minimum of 5-6. To me, this year was still about building. Next year, I expect nothing short of the playoffs or heads need to roll. Matthew said, I expect 8-8 this year, but we've got to learn to close out games, score TDs, not field goals, and secure the ball better. Still young and manageable schedule in the end. Would love to see 4-1 finish, but you can't finish any worse than 3-2 in this stretch. The fan base is getting impatient. Hashtag Jaguars today. And then Kurt simply said, better. So there you have it. A mixed a bag of opinions on that as the Jags head into their first December games of the season coming up, starting with Tennessee this weekend. Ryan O'Howard of the Florida Times Union will join us tomorrow. We'll talk with Jim Wyatt, who now writes for the official Titans website. I didn't even try to hide that one.
That was weird.
I was right in front of the mic. I could have turned. I don't know. I just it was one of those. This came out. What can I tell you? Jim Wyatt writes for the Titans website. He'll join us tomorrow to preview the opponent this week. Thanks today to John Osier from Jaguars.com for stopping by, for Spinner Howland, for Ricardo Bramwell of Team Jamaica, and Mike Timpano. I'm the worst with pronouncing names, aren't I? Mike Timpano with Team USA, and Dr. Stephen Lucy with JOI, all checking in today. Thanks to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor, and the Tom Bush family of dealerships, who brings you the Fan Feedback Spotlight. Once again, thanks to everybody in Jacksonville who helped step up to the plate and set a new J-Fund Radiothon record. Blew it out of the water yesterday with over $91,000 donated on behalf of the good people of Jacksonville for the J-Fund. That money will stay right here and help family, friends, neighbors, and people right here in this community dealing with childhood cancer in their families. So congrats to all of you out there. All right, that's going to do it for us today. For Fat Tony, for Joe Fortunato, for Tyler Devitt, and all of our guests today, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. XL Primetime moments away here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flap.
Woo! That's great job!